The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
So, one of the hallmarks of progressivism is making policy that's not based on anything, not based on any principles, but on popularity. When the progressive gods deem something to be threatening, even if it's constitutional, it is their duty to fix. It's their duty to do something. And it's the duty of all other progressives to fall in line or face the same abuse and boycotts usually reserved for conservatives. I love this part of progressivism. It's when progressives start to eat each other. So now, if you're a darling progressive millennial tech company like the dating app Bumble, oh, what to do? When the progressive gods declare that guns are bad, what do? You leap into action immediately. You ban all images of firearms among your 30 million users. Now, remember, Bumble didn't hold that position that, you know, all gun images were bad prior to the shooting in Parkland. But Bumble, like a bunch of other gutless companies, sprinted all over the guns bad, ban guns position simply just to keep the appearance of being socially conscious. Oh, they are such a good... Look at how much they care. In reality, the only thing Bumble is doing here is they want to stay off the progressive blacklist. They want to save face at cocktail parties. They want to avoid any controversy that might harm their bottom line. Unfortunately, you can't do both. Now, Bumble said, no, we're not, we don't want to take a political stand. No, we don't. That's not who we are. Really? Well, then how come you announced a partnership with the entirely non-political organization and non-controversial organization called Planned Parenthood? So on certain days, here's what Bumble does. If you swipe right on a potential match, it will trigger a Bumble donation to Planned Parenthood. So maybe your abortion from that date could be a little bit cheaper. Users will also have the opportunity to donate money themselves to Planned Parenthood. Because as you know, Planned Parenthood is cash-strapped. Oh my gosh, they need all the money they can get their hands on for those female health services which are declining. And, you know, of course, the 300,000 plus murders that they do. I mean, those aren't cheap. So Bumble, if I have this right, bans members from posting personal photos with firearms because that promotes death and violence. But then at the same time, they partner with an organization that kills unborn babies as their main priority. Perfectly logical. Bumbling is kind of the perfect description here. I hate this phase that America is, and I can't wait to get through the other side. But it's going to probably be 2024, 2028 before we start really going down the hill in the right direction again. But it's a private company. And it can ban all the gun photos it wants, align with whatever sick organization it pleases. But it's probably not the best customer relations move. But maybe all of their, you know, maybe all of their clients hate the NRA, and maybe all of their clients love abortion. Bumble users probably are not going to notice the double standard. But it's something that's lost on too many Americans. The fact that if you're anchored by principles, progressive popularity will lead you down a dark and very dangerous path.
It's Tuesday, April 24th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Very excited to have Jonah Goldberg on, joining us in about an hour from now. He's got a new book called The Suicide of the West. It's kind of a happy pick-me-up kind of book, you know.
It actually is. It actually is. I think so, yeah. I mean, it's...
Well, it is if you're reading it and you are looking for the stats that show what's killing us, why we need to change it. But you look at it, and at least me, I read it and I'm like, oh, yeah, but Jonah, we're never going to change those things. We're never. I mean, it is suicide. We're committing suicide.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's funny because we should ask him about this, because the title to me, at some level, he says that we are abandoning these things that have made us so successful. Yes. But I mean, yes. His argument really is about the success and how amazing it's been, right? I mean,
Yeah. I agree with you. He shows you all of the stats on why we should not abandon these things, why we should put down the knife and stop drawing the, you know, the warm tub. But I'm reading it and thinking, thank you for arming me with all of this information about marriage alone. It's a little overwhelming when you look at how far down the road we are. I mean, I don't know where our bottom is yet. Do you?
Oh, we're going to find it, though. It's going to be a fun adventure. We are really going to find that bottom,
you know,
somehow.
May I, Stu? May I just start with some of the stories that I find uplifting today?
Sure. That's a great way to start.
Okay. All right. Okay. So scientists have finally confirmed that this is actually from Science Magazine. Scientists have finally confirmed that Uranus is surrounded by fart clouds.
That's not a real story.
I swear to you, it is a real story. It is. Look, just Google the headline. It is a real story. Scientists finally confirmed that Uranus is surrounded by fart clouds. Here's the thing. Sometimes science simply confirms what we already know to be true. Mm-hmm. Losing sleep makes you cranky. Eating lots of vegetables is good for your gut, or the fact that Uranus is surrounded by noxious fart clouds.
That is actually the headline of
it
the story
is.
From Popular Science.
The new findings on the latter, published in Nature Astronomy, come as no surprise to those who have spent time closely examining Uranus. I mean, this is such an 8-year-old boy story. I love this. More than a year ago, planetary scientists said that the essence of this ice giant's scent would probably be dominated by ammonia and hydrogen sulfide. Hydrogen sulfide gives rotten eggs their stink, but it is also associated with the odor of a human fart. I mean, tell me there is no God, or at least no intelligent design, where the planet named Uranus is surrounded by fart clouds. I mean, I could go on. Would you like me to go on? I've got another one. Okay. How about this one? Penn State University has shut down their 98-year-old outing club. Now, what do you think an outing club is, Stu?
Well, if it was more recent than 98 years old, I would think maybe they were outing people for their lifestyles.
Yes,
but I think
exactly
it's probably
right.
More like they're going out on a trip, right? They're going on a field trip. It's a college, right? Like a college version of a field trip?
Yes. The group enjoys hiking, backpacking, and kayaking.
Okay. Oh.
However, the university has decided that those activities are too risky for the student body. According to Reason...
Backpacking, kayaking, hiking?
And hiking, yeah.
Too dangerous for the outdoors group?
In college. Yes.
Okay.
The college... Mm-hmm. Outdoors group. According to Reason Magazine and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Penn State undertook a risk assessment of all of its student clubs earlier this year and deemed that the outing club and outdoor recreation in general is simply too dangerous. The caving club and the scuba club were also disbanded over concerns. This is a result, an official announcement read, of the assessment of risk management by the university that determined that these types of activities in which they engage are above the university's threshold of acceptable risk for recognized student organizations. Student safety on any activity is our primary focus. Now, they say that the real problem is that these hikers, these bikers, all go on beyond the reach of cell phone towers, which puts them at risk from being disconnected from classmates and the rest of the world for short periods of time.
Now, that is a legitimate worry, because that ailment has afflicted, you know, everyone from, you know, from prehistoric history until like 20 years ago.
Could
those people dealt with it not only for short periods of time, but all times.
Right. And I'm just thinking, Stu, that the risk of being disconnected from classmates and the rest of the world for short periods of time is the reason you go hiking.
Exactly why.
What the hell are you going outside for?
Right.
Fresh air. Bull crap. You're trying to get away from everything.
Yes. As Jim Gaffigan has said many times, he's a little bit indoorsy. And that is what I think.
My wife said to me yesterday. She said, "Are you going for walks? Because I'm out in Los Angeles. Are you going for walks? Are you kidding me? You don't want to walk outside in California. There are people everywhere." And I said, "No, honey, I can't go for walks that are just pointless. I can't take it. I can't."
You can't go to.
No, I'm alone. By the look of your face, I'm alone.
You don't want to go for. I'm interested in how you're judging this. You don't want to go for walks that are pointless.
Here, I'll tell you a story about my father. Okay, I'll tell you a story about my father. My father wanted to get into shape, so he walked 10 miles. He's like 75, and he was walking 10 miles every day. He walked 5 miles to a chili dog stand. And walked 5 miles back. Okay. Now there's a point to your walking. I want a chili dog. I'll walk to it. I got to get home because I got to go to sleep. This chili dog is just killing me. I got to walk home. That's not a pointless walk. But my wife will say, "Let's just go for a walk. It's so beautiful outside." I don't know. Let's just watch a screensaver. Hong Kong and the port of Hong Kong is beautiful too.
We'll have the best angle. The lighting will be perfect.
It'll be perfect. Mm-hmm. Why do I have to go outside to see something beautiful? Honey, let me just stay inside and gaze at you. That used to work, by the way. Guys, once you get married, it doesn't work anymore. They somehow or another are on to you. Women.
Meaning that you don't want to gaze at them to avoid exercise? That's not enough.
No, that, you know, before when you would say that, you'd say stuff like that and go, "No, you know, honey, I would just, let's just stay home. You're so beautiful. Let me just, I'd rather just gaze at you." And they'd be like, "Oh," and then they forget this idea of, "Let's go for a walk," because they're just like, "Oh, he is so sweet.
Yeah.
It is so nice. He is so caring." They tell all their girlfriends, "Oh, that's great." You only get to use that like once.
Yeah,
save it for when you're married.
It doesn't work for long, because if you do the whole "I want to gaze at you" thing, eventually they realize the flat screen's behind them, and then you're totally screwed.
And I would just want to look at you in your eyes. If you just move a little to the left, that would be perfect. By the way, you've heard of kangaroo court. Monkey court is next. First, let me tell you about how you can sell your home. If you need to sell your home on time and for the most amount of money, the real estate agent that you need is waiting for you now. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. realestateagentsitrust.com is a group that we put together that is just agents all across the country. They are listeners of the show. They have the same values that you have. They, you know, not only believe in wealth of nations, but also moral sentiments. And I know there's a real estate agent right now going, I don't know either one of the, I don't know what he's talking about. Yeah, I get it. What it means is everybody just, I think this audience is just a group of really good people. And you don't want to rip anybody off. You just want a really good deal for your house. And you want somebody else on the other side to have a really good deal. And everybody walks away happy. Can we just do that? Just sell my house, please, on time, and get the most amount of money. Yes, they can. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. If you're moving to another area, if you are taking care of your family remotely and you need to sell their house, if you, you know, just want to buy a new house or sell a new house in your community, this is the real estate agent you can trust. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Go there now. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So, Stu, if you're a person that wants to, you want the court to rule that monkeys are people too.
Interesting start of this premise, but okay.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. First of all, what time period in American history do you file monkeys are people too and think you got a pretty good chance of winning?
I mean, I would think this in the distant future.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like I would think right now, nothing makes sense.
Yeah.
Girls, in record numbers, are joining Boy Scouts. There is no sex. There's no gender. It's, you know, now I think 108 different genders.
Is there really
monkeys are people too? Fits the the narrative, does it not?
Is there gender inflation? Because I feel like every time we do a show, there's more genders.
Yes. Okay. Somebody is printing up genders. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's 108 now.
Good for
okay.
us.
So I know we are so ahead of, mm-hmm. we are so morally superior to everybody, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
So, you would want to file this lawsuit now. In all of American history, now is the best time. What's the best court? Do you want this to fall into their hands?
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals?
Yes.
I know that.
Okay, exactly right. Okay. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is the most overturned state Supreme Court, or it's not even a state Supreme Court, right. But Court of Appeals in the history of the nation. They have some, do you even know the stats? It's like some crazy percentage is overturned by the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but this is, you know, it gets overturned a lot more than the other options, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, and it's because it's California. It's they're nuts. Okay. So PETA brought a lawsuit back in 2011 against a British nature photographer who was in Indonesia, and somehow the monkey swiped his camera and managed to snap a few pictures. And one of them was a selfie. And this is the selfie, if you happen to be watching, this is the selfie he took.
Pretty solid
and it's
selfie.
A cute, yeah.
Yeah,
it's a good selfie, yeah. Right? Okay, so it's a good selfie. So PETA saw this and said, he took that selfie. You don't have a right to publish that selfie without his written consent. And the photographer's like, well, he's a monkey, so he can't write. He doesn't have an attorney or representation. And that is when PETA stepped in and said, we represent him. And they took it to court. It's just gone through the Ninth Circuit of Appeals, Circuit Court of Appeals. Wait until you hear what they've decided. Monkeys are people too? next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. British photographer David Slater on a shoot on a nature preserve in Indonesia. Naruto, the monkey, swipes his camera, little thief, and manages to take a few pictures, and they're selfies. And it's actually a really good selfie. I mean, that is better than most selfies, wouldn't you say? I mean,
it is. There's been entire books written on how to write.
I've seen the Kardashians and their selfies, and I'm just saying that's better than some of them. Anyway, so David, he prints the selfie, and he's selling it, you know, for people to publish, and he's going to write a book about it and everything else. And PETA comes in, and PETA represents Naruto, the monkey, and then files a lawsuit saying that the monkey's copyright of the image had been violated. Now, that went to court in 2011. In January of 2016, the federal judge in San Francisco ruled that the monkey had no standing. The judge in San Francisco said the monkey had no standing because he's not a person and couldn't bring a lawsuit.
Because the point here is that PETA is suggesting that the monkey did not, did not confirm that they wanted their picture to be used, right?
Well, violating the monkey's copyright.
Right. So how did the monkey agree to accept PETA to represent them?
They filed to the court as a friend of the monkey.
Okay. So the friend did not consent to this at all.
No, the monkey friend did not. I mean, well, I don't know. I don't speak Indonesian. So I don't know what the monkey said. Mm-hmm. But so it went to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, that's the one they filed it in San Francisco because they knew it was going to go to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Right.
Right.
And they knew those are monkeys are people too, kind of people, you know. Here's what's just happened. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has now affirmed, despite the fact that the lawsuit was settled in September, that the photographer does not own the pictures in question. The monkey did take them. However, he cannot assert copyright over the images. They are not copyrightable because he is not a person. This is what they actually wrote. Listen to this. We feel compelled to note that PETA's deficiencies in regard to this go far beyond its failure to plead a significant relationship with the monkey. Indeed, if any such relationship does exist, PETA appears to have failed to live up to the title of friend. After seeing the proverbial writing on the wall in an oral argument, PETA and the appellees filed a motion asking this court to dismiss the monkey's appeal and to vacate the district court's adverse judgment, representing that PETA's claim against the photographer had been settled. But it remains unclear what claims PETA purported to settle, since the court was under the impression this lawsuit was about the monkey's claims. And per PETA's motion, the monkey was not party to any settlement, nor were the monkey's claims settled therein. Nevertheless, PETA apparently obtained something from the settlement with Slater, the photographer, although not anything that would necessarily go to the monkey. As part of the arrangement, Slater agreed to pay a quarter of his earnings from the monkey selfie book, I believe it is, from the monkey selfie book, to charities that protect the habitat of this monkey and other crested macaques in Indonesia.
So they just extorted this author with stupid monkey book.
Exactly right.
And they got 25% of his earnings.
They got 25% of his earnings, but that was because he caved.
Well, he didn't want to pay legal fees. He'd rather pay fees to protect animals somewhere than legal fees. But again, he doesn't even seem like, it's not like this is they've sued someone making monkey cheesesteaks. Like, this is somebody who's obviously cares about animals and is trying to protect them and probably trying to highlight whatever plight they're going through around the world.
Yes, and they only did it. They've destroyed this guy's life since 2011. They've destroyed this guy's life, not because of the monkey. The monkey had nothing. The monkey still has nothing. If the monkey would have won, he wouldn't have become a millionaire. It was all about PETA just wanting to get someone to go on the record that monkeys are people too. That's it. So they took a man's life and his earnings, and they drug him through court since 2011 for their own personal gain. It's despicable. It makes sense. I mean, may I?
Sure.
Ivan. For the very first time, Great Britain, their National Health Service, has appointed a new head chaplain. Lindsay Van Dijk. I'm just going to pronounce it that way because I think it's Dijk.
I might know the spelling just by
anyway. he is going to lead the three priests at the Healthcare National Health Institute Trust. Now, this is the first time that Christian clerics are subordinate to a lead chaplain who is an atheist. He said, "I'm delighted to have been appointed as the lead chaplain." I bet you are. Bet you are. "I look forward to working with our multi-faith and belief team." Remember, he's a guy who doesn't believe. Who doesn't have faith? "Together, I know we can ensure people are able to receive the spiritual," which an atheist, I believe, would not delve into the spiritual, "the pastoral and religious care that is right for them. We want patients, their families, and staff across the trust to know that they can come to us for support in their time of need, irrespective of faith or non-religious belief. Anyone with within the team of chaplains goes to patients to lend a listening ear and to provide spiritual and emotional support, and doesn't specifically say, I'm from this faith, because that's not important."
But being from some faith is important, isn't it?
Do you remember, Stu, when we went on the church tour?
Yeah.
My wife said no to me. When I asked her to marry, she said no. And I'm like, honey, you can slice a piece of this off anytime you want if we're married.
She used to make a lot of really good decisions. And then
I know. That wasn't appealing to her. So we didn't have a faith in common. And she said, we won't make it if we don't have God. And so I'm like, oh, my gosh, this whole church thing, it's just... Oh, every Sunday? And she's like, I think we should live it 7 days a week. And I'm like, okay, all right. I mean, I'll pay a high price, but 7 days a week? So we went on this church tour, and we started looking for churches, and we went to everything. And we went to one church, and I'm not making this up. Tanya will verify. We go to this church. It's a normal service. And the preacher gets up into the pulpit and he says in the middle of his sermon, "Now, you all know that I don't believe in God." And that's when Donnie and I were like, no, I think there's a couple here in the back that had, is there a sign outside? Our preacher doesn't believe in God.
Hi, we're new here. Said, we have a couple questions.
Yeah, I got a couple of questions. Why are you the preacher? I looked at Tanya, she looked at me, and he said, now you know that I don't believe in God. But if there is a God, we should serve him. And again, my thought was, well, then what are you doing? Because if there isn't a God, why are you serving something that you don't think exists? We went and we wrote that church off. We thought, no, I want a little higher bar. I want a spiritual leader that actually does believe in God. But now this is what you're getting in England. They're running the chaplain service with an atheist. Now, the other side of this, Stu, is doesn't this prove that atheism is a religion?
Yeah, I guess it kind of does, right? I mean, it's always been a system of belief regarding a higher power, right? It's always been, it's always had the fundamental qualities of a religion. But I guess this really does confirm it. It does confirm
it. Yeah, I mean, if we can be at a point to where monkeys are almost people, I think we can say that atheism is definitely a religion. All right, let me tell you about FilterBuy. We want to thank FilterBuy for being such a good sponsor of ours and making portions of this program possible. U.S. companies lose $250 million a year just because of people with allergies. Something as simple as changing the air filter can make a world of difference in a workplace. Now, when's the last time you've changed your air filter? If you're a small business, when's the last time you changed your air filter? I honestly don't even know where mine is. I think I could be wrong, but as a homeowner, I believe I have purchased a house, and I maybe during inspection they were like, "Hey, we should change the air filters." If the old owners changed the air filter, then I moved into a house with a clean air filter, and I sold it with a dirty air filter. I don't know where they are. Anyway, that's just me, and that's not good. You should probably change your air filter more often than I do. FilterBuy is America's leading provider of HVAC filters for homes and small businesses. They make it really easy to improve the quality of air that you breathe. Plus, you're going to save a lot of money because apparently a dirty air filter is bad on the system. Huh? Who knew? All of their air filters are made here in the U.S. and shipped for free within 24 hours. And when you set up auto delivery, you can save 5%, and you're never going to need a reminder again, which normally comes in the form of itchy eyes and sneezing or a huge repair bill for the system. Over 600 sizes available, including custom options. You're going to find the right filter for your home or business at filterby.com. Filterby.com. That's filterby.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
You know, I tweeted, you know, at hashtag fart clouds that scientists in Popular Science magazine have confirmed that Uranus is surrounded by fart clouds. And it sounds like a joke, but it's not. It's real science. And Stu will confirm he thought I was making it up.
I did think
it's actual science.
My initial impression was it was just a stretch to make the fart joke. No, actually, scientists are saying that is legitimately what it smells like there.
Yeah.
I don't know how they know that, but they know.
Well,
that.
They know what gases are up there and what those gases smell like, and apparently it's the same gas that gives you this smell of farts. I just want you to know that people are, you know, they're engaging you know, with 12-year-old boy humor now on Twitter at hashtag fartclouds. And I don't approve. This was science, man. We brought this story to you as you know, I'm a doctor.
Just to be clear, you're saying they're doing that. They're engaging in fourth grade humor.
Will you confirm that I merely read the story from Popular Science?
Yes, I'm concerned.
I didn't make any of that up.
I was concerned about what the split exactly is between your interest in the science and your interest in making the fart joke.
Come on, man. I mean,
is there any interest in the science? Like, would you have done a story about Venus having a cloud that smells like celery? Would you have done that story?
If Venus smelled like urine, I might have some.
Why would that?
There might be some jokes. There would be bad jokes and not as good as fart clouds around Uranus. But
like if Saturn's rings smelled like strawberries, would we have done this story today? That's my question.
Sure, we would have. Science, man.
Oh, we would have.
Science. We would have.
So I'll bring some scientific stories to the table and you'll do them because your interest in science is so deep and broad that you must make sure the audience is updated.
Come
with
on,
any
that's one of the best stories that we've had in a long time.
And it's an old
world coming apart. Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. I'm trying to unite us all. And if we can't unite on just that scientists somewhere actually had to utter the words in a scientific paper, Uranus, and in the same sentence, fart clouds, that should make all of us happy. We should all come together on that one.
I feel like Uranus probably already had a future tourism problem, and this is not going to help it.
Situation. Anyway, Jonah Goldberg is going to bring down the room a little bit. We're gonna lower the intelligence level with Jonah Goldberg next. you don't want to miss it. Next, Jonah Goldberg.
Back, Mercury.
How much is your identity worth? According to an online security education company, the going rate for a user's identity is $1,200 to hackers on the dark web. I bet it's worth a lot more to you. The dark web is a system that could be linked to an online auction site or classified ads, but where criminals shop for illegal products, services, information like identities. There's so many threats out there right now. It only takes one weak link for criminals to get in. The new LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds the power of Norton Security to help protect you against threats to your identity and your devices that you can't easily see on your own. You know how tough it is out there. There's so many threats going on. You have to have some way to fight. I mean, if you have a problem, they have agents who will work to fix it. No one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor transactions at all businesses. But new LifeLock with Norton Security is able to uncover threats you might otherwise miss. Go to LifeLock.com or go to 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use promo code BECK. Get 10% off your first year. It's promo code BECK for 10% off. LifeLock.com.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
10 people are dead, 15 others seriously wounded in a vicious attack yesterday in Toronto. Happened about 1 o'clock, busy commercial street. Pedestrians took advantage of sunshine and spring weather. The attacker accelerated to over 40 miles an hour and then took his car and just swerved up onto the sidewalk, mowing down person after person after person. Witnesses saw the white Ryder rental van zigzagging back and forth, deliberately trying to hit everyone he could. At the end of his killing spree, driver jumped out of his vehicle, pointed what appeared to be a gun at law enforcement, yelling, "Kill me!" He did it several times. Police didn't kill him, thank God. They took him into custody without anybody else getting hurt. Now, we've had two attacks in North America in the past couple of days. Multiple people have been killed. What, dare I ask, what do they both have in common? I'll give you a hint. It wasn't the weapon they used. Nashville attack, involved a naked shooter with a history of mental problems. The Toronto driver ran over innocent pedestrians before attempting suicide by cop. And everyone knew he was a recluse and weird, but they never thought he would have done this. We now, though, know that he also made a Facebook post glorifying the California shooter that killed six people back in 2014. His post said, quote, "The incel rebellion has begun. All hail the supreme gentleman, Elliot Roger." Incel apparently is a term meaning involuntary celibate. It seems like the shooter in California and the Toronto driver were both, one, sexually frustrated, and two, nuts. Now, mental health seems to be the common denominator here. In fact, it's the common denominator in nearly 100% of mass casualty attacks. But that never gets the publicity. Well, all we talk about is the gun. We must start talking about mental illness. How come we only talk about the weapon used if it was a gun? Why is that? If a mentally unstable killer attacks people with a gun, it's instantly ban the gun. But if a mentally unstable person kills with a rental van, it's a sad day today. Maybe this once we'll offer our thoughts and prayers. In the UK, gun attacks in both 1987 and 1996 led to a firearms ban. In Germany, gun attacks in 2002 and 2009 led to heavily restrictive firearm legislation. The attack in Australia in 96 led to another firearms ban. That's three countries that focused on the weapon and not the problem. A time frame spanning 22 years in which 98 people were killed by mentally unstable people. Now, look at this statistic. In the past 3 years alone, 140 people have been killed in both Europe and the EU from vehicle ramming attacks. 140 people in 3 years. To ban guns, it was 22 years and only 98 people were killed. Vehicular attacks are rising at a rate higher than mass shootings. But is anyone, anywhere blamed the cars in these attacks? No. Why? Because you are an idiot if that's what you do. But when it comes to guns, you're an idiot if you don't say we have to ban every single gun. It's bizarre. We have become a culture that is losing respect for life at a rate equal to its deteriorating mental health. Because that is the problem. Mental health. And how long will it take for us to finally realize that and address it?
It's Tuesday, April 24th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Jonah Goldberg is one of my favorite people. I love following him on Twitter because he's funny and irreverent. He is also really, truly has an amazing history with his mom and dad and how he grew up and how he sees the world. He's written one of the best books on progressives out there called Liberal Fascism. It was a book that really changed my life. And he has written another book. I know the title doesn't sound real happy, but it actually is a very positive book unless you think about, okay, we're not going to fix any of these things. And then you realize, okay, maybe it's not quite so happy. It's Suicide of the West: How the Rebirth of Populism, Nationalism, and Identity Politics is Destroying the American Democracy. It is fantastic to have Jonah Goldberg on with us now. Hello, Jonah.
Hey, Glenn. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you on. Let me start with the question that I know you always want to be asked first, and that is, why'd you write the book?
Because I'm a masochist. Unlike a lot of people, I don't really love writing books. It's, you know, maybe it's because I have too many deadlines, maybe because I agonize over this stuff too much. But, you know, I spent the last 3.5 years like Howard Hughes with Kleenex boxes on my feet working on this thing. And, you know, you're right. It's a much more optimistic book. Well, it's a much more positive book than the title suggests. And one of the reasons why
it contains the answer, but I'm not sure anyone is enough people are going to actually do the answer.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I should have maybe called it a letter to a suicidal civilization.
Because, oh, that's good.
You know, one of the reasons why I called it Suicide of the West, not Death of the West or Decline of the West, is that I think we have the power to fix it. I think we have it all within ourselves to turn things around. Decline is a choice, as Charles Krauthammer likes to say. Suicide is a choice.
Yes.
And what are the things that you would tell someone who is suicidal to sort of, you know, stop despairing? And one of the things you would do is you would tell them how they have so much to live for, what they should be grateful for. And if there's a takeaway from the book, I mean, the book starts 300,000 years ago, but if there's a takeaway for today, it's that we basically have a gratitude crisis in this country.
Big time.
No one wants, everyone looks around and looks for reasons to resent what we've got and feel entitled for more. And entitlement and resentment are the opposite of gratitude.
There's a couple of books out now. Steven Pinker writes a lot of stuff where you're like, okay, well, that's kind of optimistic. These stats are really optimistic. You know, there's another one. It's not as bad as you think it is. Where it is so clear that we are just so self-absorbed and have become such, I don't know, self-hating egomaniacs that we don't see how good it is. It's never been this good, ever.
No, that's right. And but part of the problem, and you know, one of the reasons why this book kind of cuts across, diagonally across the left-right thing, is that one of the points I make is part of the problem is capitalism. Look, I love, you know, what has two thumbs and loves capitalism? This guy, and I'm pointing both thumbs at me. But
right.
I know the joke works better in front of a live audience.
You're right, but, right. I have the T-shirt that says, "Who does Jesus love?" This guy. So I got the joke.
And it has an arrow pointing to your producer?
No, it just has two thumbs pointing to me.
But look, capitalism is by far the greatest and arguably the only cooperative, peaceful system for improving man's condition, for allowing the circumstances for human flourishing that has ever been stumbled upon. It only has one shortcoming. It doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel cooperative. It doesn't feel communal because it's too good at it. It's like that old Ivory soap thing, 99.44% pure. It is so unbelievably transparent in its efficiency that we don't feel like we're cooperating. But, you know, one of the greatest essays in the, you know, if you don't want to buy this book, that breaks my heart. But one of the greatest... One of the greatest essays in the history of sort of conservatism and libertarianism is an essay called "I Pencil" by a guy named Leonard Reed.
Oh yeah,
and you know, and he points out the essay is written from the perspective of the pencil, and it's like I am an number two pencil, right? And the pencil goes on to point out that his paint comes from Delaware, the tin comes from Argentina, the rubber comes from Indonesia, the wood comes from Canada. All of these people all around the world cooperating seamlessly. Worshipping different gods, speaking different languages, to produce a pencil that no one really knows how to make. They only, you know, the pencil manufacturers only put together the last 2% of the process. They don't know how to, like, grow timber or mine tin or any of that kind of stuff. Capitalism produces these things so perfectly that the people who are producing them don't feel like they're cooperating. And so capitalism doesn't provide you a sense of meaning, doesn't provide you a sense of spiritual belonging. It provides you the oxygen to pursue those things. And so one of the problems that we've got is that civil society is eroding, the family is eroding, and people are hardwired to want to have a sense of meaning and belonging in the universe, to have a sense of, like, I know who I am and I know what my contribution is and I know what my purpose is. Capitalism can't provide that. It can only provide the opportunity to pursue it, the individual pursuit of happiness. And so when civil society breaks down and family breaks down, what happens is people start searching for meaning in bad places. And so they resort to things like identity politics that says that can reduce millions of people simply to the color of their skin. That's all you need to know about them, whether they're black or they're white. Or it causes people to leap into statism where they think, you know, Les, you know, I've probably said it on this radio show a dozen times, but, you know, the first words of the Democratic Convention in 2012, which I attended for reasons probably having to do with original sin, the very first words were, government is the one thing we can all belong to.
Yes.
Now, that creeps me out. But for millions of people who don't have a sense of belonging elsewhere in their lives, that feels like a promise. It feels like an invitation to be part of something. And that's a big source of a lot of the things that are tearing apart our country, is that when family breaks down and civil society and community breaks down, people don't lose their desire for meaning. They start searching for it in places that are unproductive, and they resort to their human nature, which is inherently tribal.
So let's take a break, and then I want you to come back and talk a little bit about, I want to jump ahead to populism. And it's sure. It's really kind of talking about what you're talking about now. But people don't understand the difference between nationalism and patriotism. They think that this nationalism that we're going through, this populism, is a good thing. And you and I hold a different belief. And you talk about the coming of Mussolini and Hitler and how some of these autocratic dictatorships seem to work. Not those, but they can seem to work. And you break it down really, really well. We'll go there with Jonah Goldberg next. The name of the book is Suicide of the West. I highly recommend it, and it is available in bookstores everywhere. Just came out today. Sponsor this half hour is Blinds.com. Blinds.com, if you need new shades, blinds, shutters, drapes, whatever you need for window treatments, the changing the way your windows are covered or not covered is the biggest thing you can do for a home improvement, especially if you're looking to sell your house. Change the window treatments. It is the biggest change to your house than anything else that you can do. Blinds.com. They will completely transform a room or your entire house. And it's the best customer service I've ever experienced. If you accidentally mismeasure or pick the wrong color, they're going to remake them for free. They'll even send you free samples to make sure everything looks just as good in person as it does online. Every order gets free shipping. The prices are outrageously great, and they're now even better. So find out yourself why Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Site-wide savings happening now. Plus, take an additional 5% off at Blinds.com/back. Site-wide savings right now, plus the additional 5% off at blinds.com/beck. That's blinds.com/beck. Rules and restrictions apply.
Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Jonah Goldberg in Suicide of the West writes, recall that FDR proclaimed that necessitous men are not free men. Conservatives in the classical liberal tradition argued with that approach is a violation of liberalism properly understood and destined to constrict freedom in the end. He goes on to say, but look at how in the last couple of decades, the rhetoric of the Western elites has grown increasingly hostile to democracy, free speech, and capitalism. And New York Times columnist, best-selling author Thomas Friedman spent much of the last two decades gushing over China's enlightened authoritarian capitalism. Jonah, tell me what's happening here.
Yeah, so I mean, I know you're a fan of liberal fascism, the book, yeah. Not the phenomenon. there is this. It is, as sort of I was getting into in the previous segment, there is this inherent Achilles heel, this weakness to capitalism, that because it doesn't provide a sense of meaning, it means it is particularly susceptible to appeals to other systems, other ways of doing things that are that seem more natural, right? Because we want, you know, we are wired to want to like operate all of us in it together, all of us fighting for the same thing, where we are subservient to a big man who takes care of us, sort of like a father figure. That is the natural political organization of all throughout evolutionary history. And
right.
And we have a sweet tooth for it. It's sort of like why we like sweets so much, because in our natural environment, fruit was incredibly rare and unbelievably valuable as a source of calories. And today, because we have sweets in such abundance, you get, you know, this terrible obesity problem. We have capitalism. It does not satisfy that sweet tooth for that sort of tribal desire. And so if you don't have a society that is set up where people find meaning and belonging close to home and faith, family, friends, community, associations, and all the rest, they are susceptible to these appeals from government. You know, FDR is the guy who coined the term forgotten man that Donald Trump likes to use a lot. Part of my argument is that, you know, I tell some people sometimes that this book is a prequel to liberal fascism, in the sense that all of these ideologies that we see emerge over the last 300 years that claim to be an improvement or a better alternative to capitalism, they're all literally reactionary. Because what they're all trying to do is provide that kind of tribalism, that kind of tribal attachment that we all inside crave. And so Nazism was tribalism for one race. Socialism is tribalism for one class. Fascism is tribalism for one country. And you can just go down the list. It is this idea that we're all in it together that we find so appealing. And the problem is, you can't do that at a national level. You can't do that with a continental nation with 310 million people. By definition, you are going to end up being tyrannical to some people who don't share your conception about how we should organize our lives. And yet, this thing keeps coming up in our politics, decade after decade, generation after generation, going back to the end of the 19th century, where liberal and progressive leaders would say, you know, capitalism is outdated, it's too chaotic, it doesn't work, we all have to work together, we need a moral equivalent of war, where we're all working together, or we need this new deal, where we're all in it together, or we need a great society, where we're all in it together. Or as Barack Obama put it in his State of the Union address, once he said, you know, we all need to be like SEAL Team 6, who, you know, dropped all of their petty associations and petty partisan desires and ambitions to work together to fight for a common goal. Well, you know,
Jonah,
that turns on its head the idea of a military in a free society. The free society
right.
is supposed to be out there protecting our liberty, not providing a model of best practices that we're all supposed to emulate. We're not Sparta.
I only have 30 seconds. Why is the Bill of Rights not a noble enough cause to band together?
Because we don't teach people that it should be. That is the core thing about this book. It's an argument for gratitude. You know, Calvin Coolidge had it right. If individual rights belong to everybody, if the people should be ruled by the people, if our rights come from God, not from government, that is final. You can't improve on that. As a system of government, we're on the top of the mountain. And whether you want to go left towards socialism or right towards nationalism, you're still heading down.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
This is an exceptional book that everybody should have in their library. Suicide of the West. Really, really well done by Jonah Goldberg. I mean, just listen to the chapters. Human Nature, Our Inner Tribalism. Corrupting the Miracle, When Human Nature Strikes Back. The State, a myth agreed upon. The Birth of Capitalism, A Glorious Accident. The Eternal Battle, Reason versus the Search for Meaning. The American Miracle, they put it in writing. The Elite, Aristocrats Unchained, The Progressive Era, The administrative state, the shadow government, tribalism today, pop culture politics, the families losing the war against barbarism, the Trumpian era, the perils of populism, things fall apart, the American experience at risk, and decline is a choice. It's, I mean, it is a really well thought out book. Jonah Goldberg, its author, is with us now. Jonah, I've got so much I could talk to you about with this book.
I promise to get the ranting down to a minimum from now on. So
you're just fascinating, and there's so many good things. But let me just ask you a couple of questions. Sure. You start by saying there's no God in this book,
right?
Yet Christianity or Judeo-Christian philosophy is clearly one of the human institutions that allowed this miracle to occur and be written down. So
right.
Why did you try to leave God out of the book?
Well, I left God out of the book. I'm not an atheist. That's not the argument I'm trying to make. What I'm trying to do, which is something that is lost on, I think, in a lot of our politics these days, is I'm trying to persuade people who disagree with me. And to do that, one of the things I want to do is approach the left on their own, or progressives or moderns, whatever you want to call them, on their own terms. And if I say, this is, you know, X is great because God says so, that only works to people, you know, appeals to authority only work on people where we all agree on who the authority is. You know, if two brothers can say, we can't do that because Dad says so, you can do that. But if I say we can't do that because Dad says so to a stranger, then, well, I don't care who your father is. And so I'm trying to make the point that the miracle of liberal democratic capitalism that we have is a wonderful and incredible thing that progressives should be grateful for on their own terms.
Yeah.
In the last 300 years, people got richer, better off, less, they die, they live longer, there's less rape, there's less slavery. Every single thing that they claim to care about has been improved by liberal democratic capitalism, and yet they hate it.
But if you take God out of it, I mean, Steven Pinker just wrote on the Enlightenment. I don't know if you've read his book, but he writes, you know, 300 pages on the Enlightenment, and not once mentions the French Revolution. And that is because there was no God in there. And I understand and I applaud the way you wrote this book and your intent there. But how do we get to a point where we can say to people, look, you don't have to believe in God, but it's these kinds of institutions that have helped man understand the power of the individual and to be able to navigate without a big state.
Look, I agree with you entirely, and God kind of sneaks back in towards the end of the book because, first of all, I think the Pinker book is very impressive, but one of the things I think he gets wrong is he treats the Enlightenment like it was all one thing. And sort of like as Mike Myers' dad and So I Married an Axe Murderer says, when it comes to Enlightenment, if it's not Scottish, it's crap. And the French Enlightenment has lots of problems to it, in part for the reasons that you say it left God out of it. And one of the most challenging, if not debilitating, turns in Western civilization has been the loss of the common acceptance of the idea of God-fearing. Because character is that thing you do, I mean, it's a sort of a Hallmark card thing, but character is that thing you do, are the things you do and how you behave when nobody is watching. And when we lived in a society that was God-fearing, you always felt like God was watching, and that kept you from giving in to the worst parts of human nature. We now live in this romantic moment where we're told the highest source of authority, the highest source of authenticity are our inner selves, our gut instincts. We appeal to our feelings, not to facts, and we turn inward, and when you do that, that's how you get all these riots of asininity on college campuses, where kids say, I don't want to debate, I want you to honor my feelings.
Right.
When your feelings are the ultimate arbiter of morality, you can get away with almost anything.
Well, it's why I think Nietzsche is so misunderstood when he said God is dead. That wasn't a proud proclamation, that was a warning. What are we replacing God with? And we're not replacing God with anything other than feelings. Your book is a really one of the best defenses of capitalism that I have seen, especially in a time when there is no defense for capitalism, at least on the college campuses. Most 50% of college students in the U.S. would rather live in a socialist or communist country. The colleges are not teaching natural rights. They're not teaching individual sovereignty. So how do we reach those people?
It's a challenge, and part of the point of the book is trying to reach out to those people. I mean, I think one of the things that I keep trying to impress on people is that, you know, most of our political problems are downstream of our cultural problems, of our social problems. And one of the things I think is fascinating about particularly kids on elite college campuses, right? I have a lot of respect for kids who go to community colleges because they typically are paying their own way and they take it more seriously and they don't have a lot of time for the stupid stuff. But at these elite schools, which I talk to all the time, this is the first mass generation of kids that have basically had their entire lives micromanaged, where they've almost, you know, and again, this is a sweeping generalization, but you have these kids who've never really had to sort of adjudicate interpersonal conflict themselves. Some coach mm-hmm. or teacher or parent gets in the way. And when you have kids like that who don't, you know, who've never been bullied, you know, zero tolerance for saying anything mean to anybody, you have these kids who are very smart and very driven, very ambitious, but also ill-equipped to deal with anything that's shocking or troubling or new, and that's why, you know, they need trigger warnings. That's why some of them actually need written contracts before they go on a date, because they don't know how to, like, you know, deal with a member of the opposite
sex. So bizarre.
And so one of the problems that we've got is we've got this mass generation of elite kids who think they're entitled to run the country, and in some respects it's understandable because they're going to end up running the country the way we organize our society. But they live the most custom-made lifestyle we've ever seen. Any, you know, these kids get everything they want on demand. They schedule their lives on demand. They live iPhone lives, but they vote for a post office party.
Yeah.
And they and, you know, and one of the things that drives me nuts is on college campuses there is this weird notion that being liberal is rebellious. And I always like to ask these kids, I'm like, well, wait, let me understand this. So your teachers are liberal, your teachers in high school are liberal, professors are liberal, administration is liberal, the publishing industry is liberal, the media is liberal, Hollywood is liberal, music industry is liberal, fashion industry is liberal, and you think you're sticking it to the man by agreeing with them? You know, and they all look at me the way my old basset hound would look at me when I tried to feed it a grape. You know, with just total incomprehension, you know. And but this is the thing, we teach an adversary culture. We teach a sort of conformity that says you're supposed to dislike this country, you're supposed to dislike its heritage, yeah. You're supposed to dislike its principles. They're all hypocritical, founding fathers, hypocrites, yada, yada, yada. There's a better way to do it, and there isn't a better way to do it. We can improve the way we're doing it now, but there is no better system to go to.
Let me see if we have time here to talk a little bit about your observations on what's driving the behavior of the left and the press to do everything they can just to destroy Donald Trump.
Yeah, look, I mean, as you know, I've been a critic of Donald Trump. My standard line on this, though, is I think the resistance people are making idiots of themselves. And whenever I talk to them, I try to tell them, look, he's not, you know, Donald Trump is not Hitler. Hitler could have repealed Obamacare. You know, he is, you know, and it's funny because it's true. I mean, look, he's a flawed character. I'm not going to back off of that. I know that bothers people. It seems to me that that's undeniable if you actually hold constant your views of what good character are to prior to 2015. But he's getting a lot of good things done. You know, there's a debate internally in Washington about how much of the good things that he's getting done are because of him and how many of them are in despite of him. And we can have that argument. But there is this, you know, it takes two to tango. And a lot of the problems on the right, a lot of the reasons why Trump was elected and why I'm sympathetic to a lot of his voters and a lot of the arguments for, you know, electing him, is that there was this profound backlash against the way the left was operating, against the way Hillary Clinton was operating, and yeah. There's this sense that we needed a guy to fight for us because the old establishment wasn't getting done. And there's a lot of merit to that. And meanwhile, the left and the media, they're responding to Trump like like antibodies attacking a virus. And they don't make distinctions about anything. And so this puts people like me and some of my colleagues at National Review and some other places in this weird place of not giving in to either the wild pro-Trump stuff, which says that anything he does is great, or to the wild anti-Trump stuff that literally says, you know, look, he put salt on his French fries. Hitler put salt on his French fries, you know? There's a middle ground place, and I think you understand that too, is that you don't have to demonize everybody who likes Donald Trump or think he's better than Hillary Clinton, because look, better than Hillary Clinton is an important thing. I don't think it says a lot, as some people do. I think it's like saying the best gas station sushi in Alabama, you know, it's saying something, but it's a low bar as far as I'm concerned.
Jonah Goldberg, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks for your hard work on yet another great, great book, The Suicide of the West. And we'll talk again. Thanks, Jonah.
Hey, man. Always great to be here. Thank you, man.
You bet. That's why I like following him on Twitter. He is so funny. He is so funny and so smart.
I love it because you could get, you know, those jokes in the middle of a really deep look at human civilization, which this book is. It's a really worthwhile picking out. He's one of my favorite authors because he can do both of those things so well.
I think that is that's the funniest thing I've heard in a long time. The best gas station sushi in Alabama. That's not saying a lot. The name of the book is Suicide of the West: How the Rebirth of Tribalism, Populism, Nationalism, and Identity Politics is Destroying America's Democracy. He is taking down the progressives and this neo-Marxism like only Jonah Goldberg can do. Make sure you pick up the book. All right. Our sponsor this half hour, it's 1-800-FLOWERS. When is Mother's Day?
I can look that up for you.
It's like
Google that thing.
I think it's a couple of weeks away already.
When is Mother's Day?
Mother's Day is on Sunday, May 13th, 2018.
Oh, thank God. I thought it was so it would have just ended at Sunday. I would have, oh my God. What? What? Okay. Woo. Thank you. All right. By the way, I have to tell you, I was walking around and I saw something from Denmark. And we were talking about Denmark and Sweden, and I said, what's the capital of Sweden? And we were talking about it, couldn't remember, and somebody said, let me just Google real quick. Looks at the phone, wrote C-A-P, and the pull-down bar said, capital of Sweden. Come on. Come on!
So they
what
Googled,
are the odds?
They started Googling CAP, and the first thing in order was capital of Sweden.
Of Sweden.
Why would that be there other than they just heard you?
Exactly right. Hmm. I mean, isn't that a little bizarre?
It's very bizarre.
Yeah. Anyway, you're going to be getting all kinds of ads now about Mother's Day on your phone now that you've done that. Anyway, Mother's Day is right around the corner. I just don't think that there is anything harder than a mom. I can't even imagine the job. I can't. My wife runs the house. She, runs the school literally. She is the, you know, chief trauma nurse. She's my best friend. She does everything, absolutely everything. One day a year, we set aside to appreciate our mothers, the ones that are in our house raising our kids and the ones that raised us. I want you to call 1-800-Flowers.com. Get ahead of the Mother's Day rush. 1-800-Flowers.com is going to give you their exclusive 36 for 36 offer. This is what the 36 for 36 is. If you happen to be, you know, watching on television, you can see the flowers here in the studio. They're beautiful, beautiful roses, shades of pink, orange, lavender, and they're beautiful, huge, long-stem roses. Now, 36 sorbet roses for only $36. It's an amazing offer. it's only happening because we're this far out from Mother's Day, and so they can get ahead of the orders. Do it now. Save on this amazing offer right now. 1-800-Flowers, 1-800-Flowers.com. It's what mom would be doing right now if she were ordering for herself. She'd be way ahead of the game. Order 36 sorbet roses for $36. 1-800-Flowers.com. 1-800-Flowers.com. Click on the radio icon and type in the promo code Beck. It's 1-800-Flowers.com. Promo code Beck. The offer ends Friday.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Welcome back to the program, live from our studios in Sherman Oaks, California, just outside of Los Angeles. We are so glad that you have tuned in today. Don't forget, on Thursday on the Blaze TV, Make America Dinner Again, an awesome, awesome episode of how people from different faiths, different beliefs, different walks of life can all come together and have dinner. It was an amazing experience. That's Thursday, only on The Blaze at 5 p.m.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Starbucks is learning an important lesson. Despite every attempt at trying to ease the progressives' outrage following the recent arrest of two black men into Philadelphia Starbucks, they simply cannot. Starbucks' decision to close all locations on May 29th for racial bias training has now only led to further demands, deeper outrage. And the mainstream media has baited it at every turn. Washington Post naturally made the incident about police brutality. Yes, we need to restrain Starbucks employees, but we also need to restrain the police. Are you kidding me? The Huffington Post blamed white people, even brandished a poll about how somehow this is supposed to prove that white people are out of touch. But before we, you know, cash in on a Huffington Post poll, just remember that the HuffPo predicted that Hillary Clinton would win the 2016 presidential election with electoral votes by 98%. So their methodology on polls might not be the best. But progressives, once again, have made America out to be a festering, hate-filled Klan rally, funded, of course, by the patriarchy. This story is not about race, guys. It's not. It's not a racial issue. Two people went into a business that has a bathroom is for customers only policy. They didn't buy anything. They weren't customers. Yet they still used the bathroom. Then they sat down. Tables are for paying customers only. They sat down. They wouldn't leave. This has happened to white people. It happened to a white pregnant woman. It happened to a cop. This has happened before. Nobody seemed to have a problem with it. Yet, the shrill progressives have stomped around, throwing tantrums, demanding things like a spoiled child. And like a spoiled child, nothing will ever be good enough for them. The mayor of Philadelphia wrote a letter to the editor in the Philadelphia Inquirer, groveling in a plea for retribution. He uses the word pain in every sentence. There was so much pain caused by... There was no pain caused by this. None. None. I mean, unless the handcuffs were on too tight. There was no pain. Can we give word meaning again? That's not pain. You're in a safe zone. Yes, if someone's not saying, I'm going to rape you and your dog, you're most likely in a safe zone. You might be uncomfortable with the ideas that are expressed, but if somebody is threatening you with rape or murder or whatever, then we need to get you to a safe space. But please, don't tell me that you're not in a safe zone when somebody is just expressing an idea that you don't like. No, but it causes so much pain. Instead of the mayor standing up for his police and his black police chief, who said this wasn't about a race... Instead of standing up for the police that followed protocol did their jobs without any rude behavior, he trashes them. No training, no apology, no public evisceration will ever be good enough for the modern brand of neo-Marxist social justice warriors. Can we draw in quarter people? Wouldn't you love it if we took the police and we tied a leg, one leg to one horse, another leg to another horse, and then the arms and the heads to three other horses? Wouldn't that be great? Because then we just slap them on the butt and they pull that person apart and we can all cheer. Yeah, there goes that Starbucks manager that we don't know anything about. These guys are never going to stop being victims, ever. And every time someone pays attention to them, every time someone caves, they grow stronger. This is in the textbook. This is how it works. By forcefully demanding that the social justice warriors, the have-nots, aided by the mainstream media, are powerless, and that everyone else must shut up and do exactly what they say, they're able to rise into the position of power that their entire ideology is hell-bent on destroying. But in doing so, they become the haves, while enjoying the benefits of the have-nots. And they don't ever have to take any responsibility. It is perfect. There's a philosopher, he's a Marxist, Slavoj Žižek. He said that the left often dwells on past failures in order, quoting, to maintain a moralistic position of powerlessness. This calculated victimhood, however, is exactly what gives them power. In a word, it's kind of ironic.
It's Tuesday, April 24th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, Stu.
Yes.
I think we should start a new segment on the program. I like to call it Drunk News.
Oh.
Because if I read some of the news, and I would read it as if I were drunk, it would make more sense.
Okay,
for instance,
I don't know if I'm sold on the concept fully. Can we do have an example of this?
For instance, yes, here it is. Here's one. And this is may not be the best one, but it's just the one at the top of the stack. Okay. Thousands of girls are now joining boys as Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts. Right?
Yeah, no, it actually...
kind of way, you know, you expect, okay, well, he's drunk. He's drunk.
Right, like if...
Now the girls are joining the Boy Scouts, and the Boy Scouts are opening up their arms, and they're welcoming them in. Because there's a soft launch followed by the Boy Scouts announcement in October that the Boy Scouts would begin admitting girls to the Cub Scouts. And
yeah.
they would establish a new program for older girls based on Boy Scout curriculum.
This is good because if I were to tune into the news and they were to tell me this story, I might be potentially you could be outraged, you could be upset, questioning our future. But if you walked by a vagrant who was who was wearing, you know, tissue boxes for shoes and sitting next to a burning barrel to keep warm,
correct,
you might think it's not that big of a deal. It's just some guy blurting out some fantasy. It feels a lot better.
Yeah, I think this works. Let me read that last part. The soft launch followed the Boy Scouts announcement that they would begin admitting girls to the Cub Scouts later this year and would establish a new program next year for older girls in the using the Boy Scout curriculum. See, I immediately go to, I'm a little upset.
Right.
But the soft launch follows the Boy Scouts announcement in October. They begin admitting girls into the Cub Scouts starting later this year. And then they would establish a new program for older girls based on the Boy Scout curriculum.
It doesn't sound offensive to me at all.
I am not angry at all. I think we are going to start a new segment on the program, Drunk News, just for all of the things that we really find really irritating. Let's just hear them for the first time from somebody who's hammered out of their mind.
Yeah, because when you talk to someone at a party and they're hammered and they say something that's completely out of the ordinary and doesn't make any sense, you just brush it off as, well, they're just hammered. They're not making any sense because, you know, that's they don't have the facilities to, you know, come up with a coherent thought. And that's right. Our news today, pretty much.
For instance, let me give you this one. I think this could be used as a defense. You just have to read the defense as a drunk person. California Assemblywoman Christina Garcia, the prominent hashtag MeToo activist, is now under investigation for groping and sexual harassment of former legislative staffers. She was also reprimanded by the former Assembly Speaker John Perez in 2014 for making racially insensitive comments directed towards Asians. Apparently, they were in a caucus meeting the same year that she also acknowledged using homophobic slurs aimed at Perez. Sources say it came during a legislative battle that arose when Asian American community activists successfully lobbied to defeat a Democratic proposal to overturn California's ban on affirmative action in college admissions. They argued that such a move could hurt Asian student admission rates. Perez announced the move to return the bill to the Senate without any action, effectively blocking its advance. She apparently was very angry during a tense meeting of the entire assembly, and she said,
this really makes me want to just punch the next Asian person I see in the face.
It sounds a lot less threatening when you're hammered.
If she says, man, this makes me want to feel like I just feel like I want to punch the next Asian person I see in the face.
Totally different. Yeah, it sounds terrible. But when you just kind of slur it.
I just really just would like to really just like, makes me feel like I just want to punch the next Asian I see right in the face. But I don't because I love them.
Not exactly sound so good even in the drunk voice.
Yeah. No, it did.
I don't want to assault an entire race of people. Probably not the right way to go. But hashtag Me Too from this Me Too activist.
So this Me Too activist, by the way, she not only said that, but she also has groped a former staffer at a softball game.
Mm-hmm. I see how soft they were. That soft.
Right. It's so conducive to sexuality, softball. You know, it's you're dressed up in those sexy uniforms. You've got
wait a minute, what?
You've got those nice loose fitting pants with the weird button up shirts, and there's nothing sexier than softball.
There's nothing.
A work softball league.
Well, apparently the work softball league it ended in a night of drinking, and she said,
"I got an idea. Oh, you should play spin the bottle." Hey, I got an idea. I should come up with something that is going to make all of you take your clothes off. And this is a completely harmless way of saying, you should just get naked. And we should all be naked and have sex.
Mm-hmm. By the way, this Me Too activist, she's been subject to a legislative investigation over allegations of the sexual harassment and groping. In an interview, she did acknowledge she referred to her political opponent, Perez, that we've been talking about, as a, quote, homo, end quote. And she used candid language in what she believed was a safe space of her office.
I was just using some candid language. I was in a safe space. Mm. I thought I could talk about that homo and the safe space.
She also used another slur for gay people that we cannot quote here on
not
this particular
even,
program.
Not even in this voice. Use that word.
In the drunk voice, can we do it? But it begins with an F. She says, sure, she used these slurs, but only in a moment of anger. And I think we can, because it was only fueled by absolute anger towards someone, we can completely excuse it.
Sweetheart, daddy only drinks because you cry so much. I had a really good reason.
While we're here, we should talk about Joy Reid, too.
Can we come back? Because this is the most amazing thing. She's saying that, no, my website was hijacked and somebody wrote all of this stuff, and put it on the website that you can't find anymore. However, that's not what her employer, NBC, is saying. NBC is saying, no, that was never on her website. Those pictures were doctored.
I think I should get the story straight before they pronounce any kind of, I'm innocent.
It's another amazing story about how if you're on the right side, you're totally cool. All right, volatility in the stock market. One of the reasons investors are panicked is because of rising inflation. Now, one of the few investments that thrive in inflation is gold. It's one of the major reasons I own it. In fact, it is the biggest reason I own it. I think collapse comes, but it comes in the way of inflation. Nobody in the history of the world has ever printed as much money as we have already printed. We're still printing it. They've never recovered from this. Now, maybe this time it's different, but usually what happens is the dollar or the currency begins to tumble, and then people start to sell the dollar overseas, and then it's over and lights out. Well, lo and behold, that's exactly what is beginning to happen now. The dollar has lost a lot of value recently. You have probably lost about 10% of whatever you've had in the bank in the last 18 months. That's a lot. Gold hasn't lost its value. In fact, it has gone up because in times of inflation and in times of instability, gold not only retains its value, it grows in value. So may I suggest you call Goldline now, 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE. Call right now. There's a limited number of these banknotes that they're gonna send you just as a reminder, and I love these. This is from the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, and they're just going to send them to you. This is one for $10 billion. This is what happens when you debase your currency. So just for calling, all you have to do is just ask them for the $10 billion note. Worth $10 billion some Zimbabwean dollars. And it's yours for free. That's how valuable that $10 billion is. Call Goldline now, 866-GOLDLINE. See how easy it is to own gold and silver? 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com. Read their important risk information and find out if gold or silver is right for you.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So Joy Reid, her homophobic posts on her blog, she says, were made by an unknown, shadowy external party.
Well, this is excuse number 10, though, on this trail. You're skipping all the beginning, because the first time she just apologized for making them, because she was calling Charlie Crist all these
Miss Charlie slurs.
Miss Charlie. And Miss Charlie. You know, saying, Miss Charlie, stop pretending, brother. It's okay, you don't go for the ladies. Now, again, this is a liberal host. If you don't know who she is, you are probably a human being, because no one knows who she is. But she's on MSNBC all the time. And so she first admitted...
Hang on just a second. Hang on. Let that sink in, because there are people that may be listening that work at MSNBC that are like, wait, she works where? Here? Anyway.
She admitted it the first time. She said she did these things. She's like, oh, that was another time and blah, blah, blah.
We hadn't all come to our senses yet. Hillary Clinton hadn't said it was okay now to be for gay marriage. So I was still cowering in the darkness.
The arc of history, Glenn. The arc of history.
The arc of history. Yes. It hadn't been bent yet forward.
Right.
But now these anti-gay comments, she said, most people cringe at the sight of two men kissing. She said this was fabricated, it was offensive, and it was hateful. Most people have a hard time being convinced to watch Brokeback Mountain. I admit I couldn't go to that movie either, despite my sister's ringing endorsement, because I didn't want to watch two male characters having sex. Does that make me homophobic? Probably. No, can we understand what homophobic is? I'm afraid of gay people. I'm afraid of, I don't know what, that they're going to come and beat me up. They're going to come and, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. But that's what it is. You're afraid of just people who are gay. I just because you don't like to see two guys having sex doesn't make me afraid. I don't want to go to a movie where I have two really ugly people having sex. Does that make me ugliophobic?
Yeah, it used to be called a sexual preference, is what they used to describe it as. Now it's no longer allowed.
Yes, yes. More in a second. And Pat Gray joins us next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Back in the chair and in sketchy health, he could go at any time.
So you better shut up and let me talk.
We welcome Pat Gray.
Thank you, Glenn.
Pat, how are you feeling? I'm a doctor. You can share all of it with me. I'd like to know what happened. I'd like to know, A, how much weight did you lose? Because that is one of the things where you're seriously ill. When you come back the other side, you've lost so much weight that you're like, well, yeah, I almost died. But look at me now. You know, I've lost a lot of weight.
I lost 8 pounds.
Wow.
That's it?
8 pounds.
In a week? That's pretty good.
It wasn't bad.
Oh, that's not. His kidney shut down. He went into kidney failure. That's not enough. You got gypped.
I'll go back and try it again and see if I can lose a little more weight.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful weight loss plan. So
tell us what happened, and please emphasize all of the hair-raising parts that still are kind of out there, because you could pass away at any time in a dramatic fashion, and it might happen on the Pat Gray Radio Roundup today or tomorrow or the next day.
It's not what it's called. So it won't happen.
Whatever. When you're on the radio, it could happen, and you don't want to miss it. You don't want to miss it.
No, so, that does add a spine-tingling nature to the show, though, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't
Die
it?
At any moment.
His kidneys could shut down, and he's dead. Yeah, okay.
So a week ago Monday, I woke up with a pain in my side and got up at 4 in the morning and just kind of walked around. I was going to walk it off. And the more I walked, the worse it got. And then I sat down for a while and it just built and built and built until it was the worst, most intense back pain. And you know, I've pretty dealt with some back pain in my life for the last 30 years. I've dealt with a lot of back pain and I thought I'd experienced the worst of it. No, I hadn't. There was ways
well,
to
there's
go.
Something. There's a difference between back pain and kidney pain.
Yeah. Oh my
kidney
gosh.
Pain. Oh my gosh.
I mean, it was out of control. You can't think about anything but the pain. You're all about the pain at that point. So I finally got my wife up at about 6:30 and we went to the emergency room and, they got me in pretty quickly. Started doing some tests, asking me questions, and immediately they thought it was kidney stones and they took me in for a CT scan. And they still thought it was kidney stones. And the doctor came in and said, we got to remove these right away because your kidneys have shut down. You're in kidney failure. Like, wow, geez, what? I mean, kidney failure? So by 9:15, I was in surgery.
Okay, did you have any symptoms the night before?
None. Mm-mm. I felt fine. I felt fine right up until 4 in the morning when I just got a side ache. Had no warning whatsoever.
So what he's saying, at 6 o'clock, he gets up to go to the hospital. By 9, he is almost... He could have died.
Could have died.
I want you to know that 3-hour period is the size of his show. He seems fine now. He could be dead by the end of the show.
That's really good
Don't
commentary.
Miss an episode.
That's very helpful.
All right, go ahead.
Really good.
So. Pat and I actually we have an agreement we made a long time ago. If we're working together and one of us dies, the other has to exploit the crap out of it.
Purely for ratings purposes.
Yeah,
I mean, just it's a long-standing 30-year agreement.
Yeah, yeah.
so
he almost died. So I just want you to know he might die this week.
It could happen.
He could die.
It could happen. So I was in surgery and that went pretty well. He put the stents in. He put stents in both my kidneys because both of them were shut down. But it turned out that he didn't remove any kidney stones, even though I still have some in me.
He
couldn't get to him, or he didn't have the right equipment, or I've never got a full explanation of why don't you just do it all right then? Because I was in so much pain, I was glad he was not doing anything to me. So he put the stents in both sides, and then I stayed overnight in the hospital, and they sent me home the next afternoon, and got through the next day, started to develop a fever. By Thursday morning, the pain was back on the other side. So it went from the left side to the right side. And it was just as intense as before. And I was in the...
Wait, but did you have both sides? Both sides he operated on?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And so on Thursday morning, I went back to the emergency room. And they shot me up with more... Oh, by the way, I got fentanyl, Glenn, like you did with your... It was butt surgery, right?
Yeah, it was my butt surgery. Well, yours was kind of in the butt regions.
A little higher
kind
than
of connected
the butt region,
to. So well, yeah, but it was close enough.
Pretty proud of that. It was not my butt.
Yeah,
I've fentanyl never had butt surgery.
Yeah, fentanyl is a wildly dangerous drug.
And they gave me 100 milligrams of that, and it was I think that's what it was. 100. They gave me 100 somethings of it. Whatever it comes in, pounds, gallons.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever it was.
I had 100 gallons of fentanyl.
And that was the only thing, because the morphine barely touched it. The fentanyl.
Oh, my gosh.
Fentanyl finally calmed it down to where, you know, you could see straight, at least, and talk to people. So the second time around, they shot me up again, and they said I had an infection, and they just kind of shot me up with drugs, gave me antibiotics, something called Omnicef. And sent me home this time. So then the fever continued, and it was kind of a low-grade fever up to about 101 until Sunday, and then that broke, and then I felt pretty good since then.
Wow.
But then next Wednesday, so a week from tomorrow, I get to do it all over again.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
So,
what do you mean?
I still have kidney stones in my kidneys, and they're going to remove them next Wednesday. And then remove this one of the stents at the same time. And then the following Monday, I get to go in again to get the other stent removed. So
how do they go? Do you have to go under the knife for that?
No, they go a different way.
We shouldn't talk about whatever that is.
Probably not.
Wow, that's a mighty long pair of tweezers. Uh-huh. They got to get all...
Yeah, they go a different way that feels really good later on in the day.
Oh, good, good. You know. Well, you don't have to explain on that.
No, I'm not
just,
at all.
Wait.
Don't need
I just,
to talk about
I,
it.
No, I do have a question. I do have a question. Okay, so they go in another way we don't have to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
But then they go through the bladder up to the, you know, fallopian tubes to the kidneys?
Yes, right through my fallopian tubes.
Right.
Maybe that was
to
my problem kidneys. In the first place.
Right.
I'm identifying as the wrong type of person.
Well, they thought I had kidney stones once, and they realized that I just had ovaries in there somehow or another.
I believe that.
Yeah.
They're like,
Glenn, your ovaries dropped. And I'm like, wow, okay.
Finally.
So,
you're finally a woman now, Glenn.
So did they give you any sense of why it happened or what caused it? Or is it just
the scarring? They said could have come from my appendicitis operation because my appendix started to break and leak, and it could have come from that. It could have come from football. It could have come from a lot of different places. You know, maybe the medication I take for my back. Wow. I don't know. Probably all of the above. So,
yeah. Why? So I wait a minute. I want to make sure I understand this because I'm a doctor. Why did
you should
have
understand it
in
before
there?
Anybody else? No, it's not. The football's not in there. It could have come from playing football and you know, banging around. You know,
kind of like that concussion thing,
right?
Right.
Yes.
Did they check your head?
No, they did not.
No, they did
not. Clearly,
they
didn't.
Okay. Well, I just want you to know, mm-hmm. we're glad to have you back, even if you don't last your entire show.
Right.
And I urge you, Pat, please go home, because if you die on the air, it will be dramatic. It mm-hmm. will be. Mm-hmm. It will be something that will be seared into everybody's memory, and right. everyone would be talking about, and I don't want to put you through that or the audience, but if you insist on going on today.
I do. I do. I'm going to soldier through it.
That's brave. That's brave.
I'm not going to miss a second.
It could happen just after 11 o'clock Central Time. I'd be listening right. to find out.
Yeah, it's not going to happen now, or could it?
I mean,
could it happen?
It might. Yeah, it might happen in the next few minutes.
Pat's going to stay here just for the next few minutes mm-hmm. in case he starts to die. We
then you'll get a camera right on me.
But we'll have a camera here
okay.
because, you know, there might be a deathbed conversion to, like, you know, some clown college or something. I don't know. You never know what could happen.
My understanding is that cameras actually can heal these types of ailments. So it's worth having as many cameras on you as possible if you're going through this.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you never know. It could turn
wasn't
it around.
Aware of that.
Oh, yeah. Glenn's a doctor.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but the only problem is
yeah.
it's going to look like you've gained 2 pounds. You know.
Oh yeah, because I only lost 8, so the camera
lost
added,
8.
Added back 2.
All right, Pat. Good to have you back, even though it may not last. Good to have you back. All right, Stu. What is the what's the latest on Bitcoin? Where is it now?
Bitcoin is currently, as we speak, at not delaying at all just to get to the thing. 93.34.
It's a really bad ad lib too to get you there. It really is. What is it?
93.34. So up 93. About 50% in the past month and a half.
That's pretty unbelievable.
It's a nice little run there. And
yeah.
that's it's not the highest of all the cryptocurrencies. Some of the lesser known ones have really gone up a lot. Bitcoin Cash is up over about 100%. Several of the other smaller cryptocurrencies have really gone crazy over
have
the past
you,
month.
And did you invest in any of those that Tika, this guy that we met a few months ago, Tika Tiwari?
Yeah.
He was in, we asked him to develop a course for you, well, and actually us too, on how to do cryptocurrencies. Cause we were talking to him about cryptocurrencies. He's a Wall Street guy, who left and is now, you know, talks about crypto, investments, and probably has made more money for people in the last 3 years than probably any other thing out there. But he has, he was in our offices and we were talking to him about this crypto course, and he was like, you should invest in this. You should invest in this. We had no idea. I went home and I'm like, honey, we have to invest. I had no idea how to even do it.
Yeah.
'Cause it's like,
without the course, it's very difficult to do, especially when you get into the lesser known ones. 'Cause you know, getting Bitcoin, you can figure that out probably. But it's still not super easy. You get down
no,
down
if it's
the list
not
a little
in a,
bit.
If it's not in a mainstream wallet, you mm-hmm. can't do it.
Yeah, it's a real pain.
I mean, even the wallets are difficult.
Yeah, you can do it with, because a crypto course can walk you through all that. And if you to get down to, like, the real gains are now coming from lesser known currencies. You had this a huge run last year where, you know, it went up thousands and thousands of a percent, but people were dumping all their money into, like, the first ones they've heard of, with Bitcoin or Ethereum. Mm-hmm. Some of these ones that are down the list a little bit, you got to be a genius to know how to do it. That's, you know, I know a big reason why they made the smart crypto course.
Yeah. So we asked Tika to make this crypto master course. And if you're interested in cryptocurrency at all, even if you don't want to invest, you just want to learn about it, you got to take this crypto course. You can do it now. I think everybody should own at least $100 in cryptocurrency. Never, ever invest in anything where you can't afford to lose all of it. It's an investment. It's not a loan. It's an investment. Take a weekend and say, you know, if my wife and I, we went out this weekend and, you know, we were going to stay away for take a weekend away and we could afford to blow that money. Take that instead and invest it in cryptocurrency, because there's something happening there. But you have to know what it is. The exclusive Glenn Beck course right now, smartcryptocourse.com. Sign up for it right now and learn about cryptocurrency. Smartcryptocourse.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program from our studios in Los Angeles, California. I'm so glad that you have tuned in today. It's a little bizarre to be in California, where you just never know what crazy thing is going to happen next.
Yeah, I mean, you better be careful while you're out there. There's dangerous things. You've got the earthquakes. Got the pollution.
You have the mudslides.
Mudslides.
You have the wildfires.
Coffee. Yeah. Coffee. So a lot of dangerous things out there.
Hang on. Just, what? Coffee?
Coffee, yeah. Coffee. Obviously, as you know, huge risk in California. No, it's true. You could be attacked by it at any time. Because they are now going to place warning labels to make sure you know how dangerous coffee is in California. A Los Angeles
make
Superior...
It, make,
go ahead.
Make you jittery, or
no, not that at all.
No.
It's going to give you cancer.
Okay. Oh, it's going to give you cancer.
Yeah, just a little bit of cancer.
Okay. So this is one of those warning labels that says the state of California has deemed that some ingredients in coffee may cause low fetal birth weight and cancer.
That's that type of warning label they actually want to put on.
They're everywhere. They're on building. They're on every bar. They're everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Los Angeles Superior Court judge wants to have California businesses have to put warnings on coffee. It's because of a law enacted in 1986 that says businesses with more than 10 employees that must warn consumers if their products contain any one of many chemicals that the state has ruled as carcinogenic. One of these chemicals is acrylamide. Now, acrylamide causes cancer in rats. When you give them 1 to 10,000 times the amount a human can consume. So, yes.
A human can consume. Right. 10,000 times. So, imagine what a dose that is for a rat.
That's a lot. I would assume
we're slightly larger than rats.
I assume it's probably to scale, but still it's a lot more
than you
could ever eat. Now, the American Cancer Society says there are no cancer types for which there is clearly an increased risk for intake of acrylamide. Mm-hmm. But what's great about this is it's not some addictive chemical that they've put inside of it, some manufactured thing.
Sure.
What happens is every time you cook something past 250 degrees, it creates this substance. It is 40% of the calories that we eat as human beings.
My family has deemed that the state of California may cause your head to explode.
It's true.
I just want a little warning label there.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.